Good afternoon. It's Monday the 8th of October 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Mike Robinson. Joining me in the studio today, Patrick Henningsen from 21st Century Wire. Welcome to the programme, Patrick.
Great to be with you, Mike.
Right, well, we're going to get straight on with some stories that were appearing in the press last week, Patrick, and you'll understand why in a second. But this was the New York Times here. Russia claims US running secret bioweapons lab in Georgia. And that was echoed by Fox News with pretty much the same headline. CBS? US military project could be seen as a bioweapon, scientists warn.
That's NBC.
That's yeah. NBC, right. So all these stories actually were sourced from Associated Press. So this is the original one. Russia claims US running secret weapons lab in Georgia. In fact, it's not Russia that's been making that claim, Patrick. It originated with our friend Diliana Gunjeva, who has produced a documentary for a Middle Eastern television network. I just want to show a couple of minutes of that, and we'll get a feeling for what this is all about.
Tasked with the program are biologists from the U.S. Army Medical Research Unit, Georgia, along with private American contractors and the U.S. Center for Disease Control. Certain zones of the laboratory are classified zones and are accessible only to American citizens with security clearance. They are accorded diplomatic immunity under the 2002 U.S.-Georgia Agreement on Defense Cooperation. Joshua Bast is Deputy Director of the U.S. Army Medical Research Unit, Georgia. The American military scientist drives a diplomatic car and enjoys diplomatic immunity.
From the U.S. Embassy? What are you doing here at the U.S. Embassy? Are you a scientist? You're a scientist?
Joshua Bast is an entomologist and researches insects, according to a video released by the U.S. Embassy to promote the peaceful purposes of the otherwise military program of the U.S. in Georgia. Why does an entomologist work for the U.S. Army, and why is he accorded with diplomatic immunity? Considering a recent U.S. patent for a toxic mosquito aerial release system granted by the United States Patent and Trademark Office in 2014, the invention includes a drone that can release infected mosquitoes. According to the patent documents, it is capable of delivering lethal and non-lethal toxins, including an agent that can be carried and administered by a mosquito. The Pentagon scientists have performed experiments involving tropical mosquitoes and ticks in Georgia. 21,590 ticks were collected for DNA databasing for future studies at the Lugar Center under the Pentagon Project Genetic Diversity of Crimean Congo Hemorrhagic Fever Virus and Hantaviruses in Georgia. The Pentagon projects involving ticks coincide with an inexplicable outbreak of Crimean Congo Hemorrhagic Fever, which is caused by infection through a tick-borne virus.
So, Patrick, I seem to recognize the voice on the English version of that. I can't imagine who that was.
No, that was myself.
Okay. Well, look, I'm delighted to be able to welcome Diliana to the program. Welcome to the program, Diliana. This documentary that you produced has gone viral and been picked up now by the mainstream press. How has life been for you since that happened?
Hello from Bulgaria. Thank you to Patrick for the voiceover and for his expertise. He helped me to do this documentary, and a big thank you to Patrick. I'm glad that this documentary has been getting bigger international attention, because it's not only about Georgia, it's about 25 countries where the Pentagon has been running military biolaboratories. These are countries bordering on the U.S. main rivals, Russia, China, and Iran. And all these military facilities have been located and funded by the Pentagon in the former Soviet Union countries in the Middle East, Southeast Asia, and Africa.
And I mean, what is the intention in your view? What are they? Is this a bioweapons program, or is this, as they were suggesting, some kind of method for protecting countries against future potential weapons attack?
It is highly suspicious that the official explanation of the American officials that this is for the benefit of foreign nations. Instead of investing $2.1 billion in the health of its own citizens, the U.S. government has spent U.S. taxpayer money on military projects abroad, and this program includes research and DNA sequence of Russian strains of Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, plague, and anthrax, the Russian strain of anthrax for which Russia has a vaccine, and many other projects. But the Pentagon has not deployed military personnel in Russia. So this explanation that all this biological research abroad is for the defense purposes and for the U.S. military personnel abroad, it is not justifiable, because in the case of Russia, the Pentagon doesn't have military personnel in Russia. Also, this program resulted in at least 100 death cases in the country of Georgia. And according to a research investigation carried out by the U.S. By the Russian Ministry of Defense, this is a possible test of biological weapons on unwitting population in Georgia.
One of the points that I believe you had some comment from a previous president of Georgia, and she was saying, you know, it's really unprecedented for outside of an embassy or some kind of that type of institution. It's practically unheard of for areas of a building in a foreign country to be inaccessible to the citizens of that country. And that seems to be the case in this particular facility that you're highlighting here, that there are areas in this facility which Georgian citizens cannot go to. It's only U.S. citizens with specific security clearance.
Yes, exactly. This is of major concern and raises a lot of questions as to why, if this program is for the benefit of a foreign nation, why would the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, this is the organization that has been running the military program of the Pentagon in Georgia, why would they have classified zones accessible only to American citizens with security clearance? Also, another very legitimate question: why would the Pentagon pay at least $160 million in the case of Georgia in a military facility and pay for private American contractors which are not accountable to Congress and which can move around the rule of law? I was very surprised to find out that at least three private American contractors have been deployed to this military facility, and the question is why? What's the point, and why a private company would be awarded at least $160 million for biological research program abroad? It doesn't make sense if this is for the benefit of a foreign nation. Also, I want to stress that this private American contractor also was awarded a huge amount of money for security, border security project in Georgia involving the Russian border. And it is highly suspicious that the same private company that operates inside the Luga Center, the military biolaboratory, also happens to work on the Russian border. People from Chechnya, this is a republic from the Russian Federation, sent me a video featuring a drone dispersing white powder over a village next to the border with Georgia. And of course, my request for a comment by the Georgian authorities was denied, and they don't want to comment on that fact. This is very worrying, because a drone dispersing white powder or a drone for dispersal of toxic mosquitoes, this is something that is in possession of this facility.
Patrick, one of the things that really struck me in the documentary was that you were highlighting, or Tiliana was highlighting, the military agreement between the United States and Georgia, which has facilitated this operation. And there seems to be a clause in that which says that the activities that take place inside this center do not fall under international law. So this is outside international law. How is that possible?
Well, international law, unfortunately, with so many instances with the United States, it's treated as a relative concept. So when the United States wants something through the international system, it will invoke or quote international law, and then when it feels that the international system is impeding its own agenda, then it will eschew international law. And this is a sort of pattern of behavior that is pretty undeniable with regards to the United States, because it's the world's unipolar superpower at the moment. So it's able to adopt that sort of realist approach to international relations. But I think the more important thing here, Mike, from a U.S. point of view, that Diliana brought up, is that you have subcontractors working at this facility, and effectively, I don't know directly if any of these subcontractors have diplomatic immunity, but they're certainly working under an environment or an umbrella that is more or less unaccountable, non-transparent, and this is happening right on Russia's border, Mike, and not just in Georgia, as Diliana mentioned, the Ukraine, Kazakhstan. These are also hosts to major bio laboratories working on very similar projects. So the question is, in this case, accountability and transparency is essential. If there is an outbreak, if there is an incident, it's important for all countries to cooperate in managing that. That is why the United Nations was set up in the first place. This is why the cooperation is important, because when you have a compartmentalization in this environment, and no accountability, this is a very dangerous equation, Mike, and I'm afraid that some, very unfortunate and bad things can happen if this is the setup that the United States is trying to design in this respect. So it's accountability, transparency, cooperation. These are all tenets of good international relations, and I don't see that happening in this case.
Okay, look, Tiliana, we're pretty much out of time, but I want to just finish off by asking, you published this on 21st Century Wire some time ago, because as you say, there are many locations for this, and the headline here is "Revealed Pentagon's $70 million chemical and biological program at Porton Down in the UK." And of course, this is part of the picture here, because there seems to be United States activity taking place at Porton Down. So, what are your feelings on just the involvement of the British side on this? Is this something which is, in your opinion, solely United States run, or is there a British aspect to this as well?
It turns out that Porton Down is just one of the many Pentagon-funded biolaboratories across the world, in 25 countries across the world, to be precise, because the Pentagon has funded a number of military projects involving research on deadly diseases such as Ebola, for example, or anthrax, or other deadly diseases. So it is highly suspicious that foreign country would pay money abroad for research projects in military facilities for the benefit of foreign nations. This is not possible, and I hope that American people will insist on answers by their government, because these are American taxpayer money. I'm not very familiar with the health system and the problems that the health system in the United States has, but is it justifiable for the US government to spend so much money on the development of possible biological weapons, even for defense? They say this is for defense, instead of spending the same money on the health of the American citizens, or on the development of measures to protect the American citizens. So this is something that I hope in the near future will happen, and the US government would be held to account for these programs. They concern all of us. They are in 25 countries across the world.
Yeah. Okay, Diljana, I could get in your vote. Thank you very much for joining us today. We will speak again in the not too distant future, I hope.
And also, if you want to see this film, it's called Diplomatic Viruses, and it's available at diljana.bg. You can go to her website, and also at 21wire.tv. You can watch this film right now or after the program. I do encourage people to watch and share this film, 30 minutes in length.
Thank you, Diljana.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, let's move on then. And, well, joint vision. Joint vision is what it's all about, Patrick. The British and the Germans have signed a new defence pact over the weekend, or just prior to the weekend. Gavin Williamson, alongside there, his German counterpart, Ursula von der Leyen, signed a joint vision statement. The joint vision statement hasn't been published yet. Some mainstream media have had some quotes from it, but it hasn't actually been published yet, so we don't actually know what it says. But it does apparently deepen the already strong UK-German relationship and increasing defence cooperation across a range of areas, from tackling violent extremism to building a new military capabilities. That must make us feel much better. Yes. Good. Right. Glad to see that. The Defence Secretary, well, they went on to say that this is really all about NATO and not about EU military unification of all, at all. And Gavin Williams has said, this statement signed today strengthens UK-German ties and bolsters the defence of two key NATO partners. This is an alliance we both hold dear. Now, I'm going to say there's a bit of strange linguistics in that statement, because, of course, he's not really talking about NATO there when he mentions alliance. He's talking about the UK-German alliance and the broader EU military unification alliance. Well, there we go. Another piece of the jigsaw has been put in place. Now, Jens Stoltenberg is in Serbia today, Patrick. And, well, let's have a listen to what he had to say.
NATO provides security in many different ways, including by helping to save and protect people affected by natural disasters. This is why 20 years ago, NATO established the Euro-Atlantic Disaster Response Coordination Center and began running exercises like the exercise we are opening today. With around 2,000 personnel from 40 participating countries, this is our largest exercise ever within this area of disaster response. Serbia 2018 is not a military exercise. It is a civilian preparedness exercise, a platform for first responders to learn from each other, to gain real experience together, and to better prepare for the times when we face real-life disasters.
Okay, so I'm going to apologize for putting everybody through the wonderfully deadpan delivery of Mr. Stoltenberg, but there you go. My question, Patrick, is this is a civilian response exercise. They're bringing in first responders to give some advice. I wonder, have they brought some white helmets in?
I was just going to ask, Mike. I think this would be a great event for the white helmets to make a cameo in. I'm surprised. I'm sure they they probably have somebody there. Maybe James Lemessurier is there to give advice on first responder etiquette.
Quite possibly. Now, they are in Serbia, of course, and this is the first such exercise between NATO and Serbia of this type. But during the press conference after that, Stoltenberg was asked about the minor problem of the fact that NATO bombed the hell out of Serbia at some point not too long ago. And he responded by saying this: "I stressed that we did this to protect civilians and stop the Milosevic regime. But my most important message is that we have to look to the future, Patrick. Mm-hmm. We don't need to worry about what happened only 20 years ago. We just look to the future and not worry about that."
He's taking a page out of Tony Blair's book there. We need to move on. We need to move on from David Kelly. We need to move on from Iraq. We need to get on. We've mourned enough. We need to forget about the past. Forget about the countries that we flattened illegally. We need to move on.
But Serbia seems to be a bit schizophrenic, a bit like Turkey, because only a couple of, what was this, a week or so ago, Serbian defense minister sums up results of joint Russian-Serbian air drills. Serbia seems to be running exercises with NATO and also with Russia. This is a bit of a problem for NATO.
Yeah, I wouldn't compare it to Turkey. That's another level of schizophrenia.
Right.
Turkey, like Serbia, like anybody in the Balkans or anybody sitting on the border between effectively East and West, finds itself always in a precarious position. I think in terms of what Serbia is doing, more than likely is being pragmatic and trying to maintain as best relations as possible with their neighbors East and West. And that's probably, in the long run, probably in their best interest. But it is sending mixed messages to some people. I would think that NATO is absolutely against any cooperation with Russia between Moscow and Belgrade, and vice versa. Moscow is probably not very comfortable at all with NATO's approaches into Serbia. So we have, once again, Mike, a return to where we were 15 years ago. So,
We wanted to just remind everybody what wonderful legacy NATO left Serbia, because here's the Dayton Accords, and let's just remind everybody what this said. So three presidents, Croat, Serb and Muslim, with the chairmanship rotating every 3 months, three separate parliaments, 11 prime ministers, many local governments.
That's quite a democracy that they've built there in Bosnia, and that's a population, Mike, of 3.5 million people. So imagine that, having 3.5 million people. It's about the size of the Republic of Ireland, Mike. Three presidents, three prime ministers, or I don't know, 11 prime ministers. I can't remember what the exactly was, but multiple parliaments, plus local governments. So great nation building project in
yes.
Bosnia.
Yes, Yugoslavia. So New York Times here, this is from a few days ago, Bosnia's election exacerbates old divisions to Russia's satisfaction. And another New York Times article, Serb nationalist claims victory in Bosnia in early vote count.
So look at the timing of this. Look at the timing of what NATO is doing. And they're ramping up a lot of the anti-Russian rhetoric and, again, trying to blame Russia for meddling in the Bosnian elections, as if you can meddle in anything that complex. But they're really upset because a Serb nationalist looks like he is going to gain an important seat in that government. And this is like, you know, the worst possible outcome for the West. This is not what they had in mind in terms of their nation building. But Mike, let's not forget that the Germany and the United States played the crucial role in the forced breakup of Yugoslavia, just by recognizing these countries as independent countries early on. They created a internal border crisis in Yugoslavia, and that precipitated the wider problems that followed. So that is absolutely 100% the responsibility of the United States and Germany early on. What happened after that was chaos, Mike. And what NATO did is, by anybody's definition, a war crime in terms of the bombing of Serbia.
Okay, well, let's move over to the United States, Patrick. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on this because it is pretty spectacular. Mike Pence is speaking at the Hudson Institute last Thursday. Well, he said they are trying, in essence, to change the international order in their favor. And the first question is, who's they? Because, in fact, he was not talking about the Russians, as you might expect. He was talking about the Chinese. He said countries are playing geopolitics, are trying to change the international order. That President Trump has made it clear that the United States has adopted a new approach to China. China has initiated an unprecedented effort to influence American public opinion in the 2018 elections. And the environment leading into the 2020 presidential election. To put it bluntly, he said President Trump's leadership is working and China wants a different American president. China is meddling in America's democracy. To that end, Beijing has mobilized covert actors, front groups and propaganda outlets to shift America's perception of Chinese policies. And this was the classic quote, as a senior career member of our intelligence community recently told me, what the Russians are doing pales in comparison to what China is doing across this country. Don't really even know where to begin with this, but that's quite an attack.
I'll tell you where to begin. So this is our evangelical vice president, and we can only pray that he's playing with a full deck at the end of the day. But what Pence is doing there is trying to use the election meddling canard that's been so...
Sorry, just correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the election meddling canard that they've been trying to deny for the last 2 years?
The Trump administration has early on denied it. Then they accepted there was meddling, but then the caveat was that there is no collusion between Trump and Russia, which is true, based on the lack of any evidence that's been presented otherwise. However, what the Republicans are doing now is using the election meddling canard, then transposing it to China in order to it seems to be in vogue, this whole concept of meddling and everything. So the Chinese are now the whipping boy, the geopolitical whipping boy, because let's face it, people are getting the Russiagate thing is getting a little bit long in the tooth after 2 years and no results. So as people lose faith in the Russiagate narrative, now it's time to rev up the Chinese menace. So this is what Mike Pence is doing. And by the way, I was speaking to a senior person in the intelligence community. What is the intelligence community exactly? And who are we talking about? Normally these experts and shadow men go unnamed. So we're just meant to think that there's thousands of deep throats running around Washington, D.C., giving advice and whispering in the ear of just about anybody about various threats that exist and various meddling that's going on. And these are the same gray men who are talking to the mainstream media, these unnamed sources within the intelligence community. And let's face it, Mike, 99% of what they've put out in the mainstream media from the IC has been absolute garbage, especially in the last 2.5 years. So it's sad to see the vice president is basically using the tricks of the very opposition that's been trying to destroy his administration. The circle of corruption has come full circle, Mike.
Well, at the risk of being called a Chinese bot of some kind, I just want to put China's response to this up, which they published over the weekend. The China Daily here saying, Pence's beggar thy neighbor speech at the Hudson Institute on Thursday is nothing but a duplicate of outdated concepts of Cold War mentality and zero-sum games, speaking with fervor and assurance, but sadly without facts. Pence, in a stream of groundless accusations, accused China of aggressively trespassing upon U.S. interests. What Pence wants is not a prosperous China, but an obedient China. And I don't think we can find too much to criticize there.
That's a pretty accurate statement by the Chinese. That's not good, Mike. When you throw a softball pitch to the Chinese and they hit a home run, that's not good. That's not good.
Well, let's look at something else which potentially isn't good. This is Daily Caller. I'm not certain how reliable this website is, but you can tell me that in a second. But basically they're saying George Soros-funded Fusion GPS, his spokesman confirms.
Sure. This particular story, now, mind you, the Daily Caller is partisan, I would say, absolutely Republican-oriented, more of a right-wing-oriented news source. However, a lot of the reports have turned out, in the case of Russiagate and Fusion GPS, to be factual. This story derives actually from a Washington Post report written by one of their top journalists, one of their only journalists, actually, David Ignatius. So one of the only people that survived the cull when they got rid of all their real reporters. So there is some factual basis to this. And yes, we do have the hand of George Soros, or more accurately, the checkbook of George Soros in the mix here with Fusion GPS and a number of these other groups involved in this propaganda ring that laundered the Steele dossier.
I noticed that became
the basis of the Mueller investigation.
Yes, I noticed that they used the word inadvertently, like he had no knowledge of it, or at least that seems to be what they're suggesting.
Well, they're being kind there. But that's from the Washington Post originally. So I do encourage people to go check out that article, click through, and also to read the Washington Post article too.
Okay, coming back to the UK then. Now, last week we mentioned that in Bristol, later in the month, the next annual summit of the Global Parliament of Mayors will be taking place. And in preparation for that, four of the British attendees to that, including Andy Burnham from Manchester, have sent a statement to the Financial Times, which was published this morning. The headline is Metro Mayors Lobby for Control Over Replacement for EU Cash. So despite the fact that most of these people are campaigning actively to stay within the European Union, they are saying that should there be some kind of deal with regard to Brexit, that they want their share of the so-called Shared Prosperity Fund, which is the name that the UK government is giving to the money that it will repatriate from the EU, and because they've said that they will continue to pay that out to local to British to farming and to fisheries and so on and to others. So the Treasury, the FT, is saying has made a commitment to match the funding, which is £2.4 billion a year. So in a joint statement to the Financial Times, the mayor said, more than 2 years since the Brexit referendum, the defining mantra of that campaign to take back control looms large as we approach March 2019. If that phrase is to mean anything, it must mean substantial devolution of power and resources out of Westminster to the English regions. Well, I would just remind everybody that this concept of devolution of power to the English regions is a European concept, an EU concept. In fact, what he's saying is another version of Brexit without the exit, because this is EU policy, the breakup of the nation state into regional assemblies. And we've been highlighting this fact for quite some time. Now, Patrick.
So essentially what he's saying is that this policy, which was implemented via Europe, is going to stay in place and
yes.
It's going to carry on into the future.
That's certainly what he's calling for. Yeah.
The only difference is we're going to pick up the bill rather than Brussels, but the European policy will move forward
yes.
into the future. So, Mike, doesn't that mean that this, whatever Europe's objectives were when implementing this policy, are still live objectives?
Absolutely.
And that's the only explanation, Mike, and that Britain is temporarily picking up the bill. What's going to happen down the line, Mike?
No change is basically what's going to happen. We're going to continue moving down this policy path that we've been moving down since we joined the European Union. That's absolutely clear. More UK news, because the UK government has decided to make geospatial data available for sale. This is fantastic news. And it's going to do that by spending £5 million. So the Geospatial Commission is going to invest £5 million to help unlock the value of geospatial data held by its six expert partner bodies. This is the British Geological Survey, the Coal Authority, HM Land Registry, Ordnance Survey, the UK Hydrographic Office and the Valuation Office Agency. So local information or geospatial data is changing the way we see the world and live our lives, they say, from helping us to avoid traffic jams to easily finding local services or deciding where to buy a house through cutting-edge analysis of GPS, satellite photography, and historical data. That's brilliant, isn't it? So what the hell is this really about?
Is that changing your life, all those things?
It is going to change our lives, and I'm about to explain why, right? So here's what David Lidington said. Our modern industrial strategy will secure Britain's position as a world leader in digital innovation. That's fantastic. Through emerging technologies, our geospatial and GovTech funding will elevate British companies onto a global market and help deliver new services to improve people's lives. So I wonder, can anybody guess what this is really about? I'm not going to give you too much opportunity.
I can't imagine, Mike. It does have anything to do with surveillance.
Possibly, but mainly 5G, of course. 5G, this is all about the 5G rollout. And here we've got 5G.co.uk just a few days ago saying, or sorry, earlier in the year, in May, in fact, sorry, geospatial data to help telcos prioritize 5G infrastructure. They're saying that Blue Sky and Esri are joining forces to offer a package aimed at helping telecommunications companies implement 5G networks faster and more cost effectively. Blue Sky specializes in aerial mapping, while Esri provides spatial analytics. But of course, they need the raw data to churn, and government has now said that they are going to provide that. So that is fantastic. We move towards our 5G utopia. And we're even paying for the privilege from taxpayers' money.
Full spectrum digital dominance, Mike.
Absolutely.
It's all going along nicely.
And another thing that's going along nicely is the fracking agenda. So here we go. Here is Natasha Engel, former MP, who has been made shale gas commissioner. This is fantastic. She gets a brown envelope or something. I'm not sure what goes on here. But she said, if extracted safely, shale gas has the potential to be a new domestic source of energy for the UK. I know, because after losing my seat as an MP for supporting fracking, I went to work for INEOS. Now, she didn't quite say that. I've paraphrased what she said, but that's basically what happened. She lost her seat as an MP for supporting fracking because the local community that she was representing had no support for fracking. So she lost her MP. But because she'd done such a good job for the fracking industry, she got a job with INEOS. That job is now coming to an end because the government has decided that she is the best person to make the shale gas commissioner. And she is there to represent local residents with the industry. There's no vested interest there, Patrick, no conflict of interest at all.
Is this not a case, Mike, of this public official being rewarded by the corporate lobby?
And now by the government. Yeah.
And now by the government for looking after their interests.
Absolutely.
Interesting, but not the people's interests that she was representing, because clearly, if the report's correct, Mike, her constituency was against fracking.
Absolutely.
That's quite an amazing turn.
Yeah.
That's quite an amazing turn.
Okay, and we'll end with the Pope, Patrick.
Well, here he is. So the Pope, this is hot off the wire, by the way, hot off the holy wire. The Pope blames the devil for divisions in the church, scandals, and seeks the help of angels. Now, he's also blaming the devil for the child abuse scandals within the church as well. And we can't argue with the Pope, Mike. It is probably true that the devil is running amok in the Vatican and further afield. That's beyond debate. But to basically try to offload the blame on the devil for what is clearly, Mike, some very real institutional problems that are long-running and very easy to identify within the institution of the church and its bureaucracy, clear corruption, clear cover-ups. You can blame the devil, Mike, only so far, I think. But then you've got to kind of draw the line. And so man does have some responsibility in all this. You can't blame everything on the devil. I don't know. That's all I can say. But I think I give him an A for trying on this one, Mike. That's quite an effort there by the Pope.
Yes.
That's a memorable one.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we'll have to leave it there for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for coming in today, Patrick. That's much appreciated. We'll be back at the same time on Wednesday as usual, and we hope to see you then. Thank you. Bye-bye.